Hello and welcome to a special podcast. I'm joined today by Father James Martin, and we're going to be talking about the first half of the final season of Mad Men. Welcome, Father Jim.
Thanks. Great to be back.
Well, we've done this a couple years now, and we can never resist the temptation to basically let you in on the conversation we have every week about this show. And I think there's some great moments that we can discuss today. So, Father Jim, where do you want to start? I mean, traditionally we've looked at certain themes and how they reflect through the show. Redemption seems like one that there was definitely more sense of hope in this season than previous seasons.
Yeah, I'd actually like to start at the last scene, which we've been talking about, sort of obsessively, at least I have for the last couple of days. And that is, and this is spoiler alert, if you haven't watched the season.
Yes, we should say there are going to be many spoilers.
Many.
Here. Yeah.
At the end of the season, what happens is the firm is essentially bought out by McCann, and the other big news is that Bert Cooper, one of the founding partners, dies. And Don has sort of gone through a very difficult season, seven episodes, seeing the sort of his collapse of his marriage to Megan. And it's just been a difficult professional sort of period for him because he'd been kicked out of the firm and he was working his way back. In any event, Bert dies, who was a kind of father figure, sort of, to Don. And he comes back in a kind of vision, hallucination, dream, mystical moment, and he sings this song, "The Best Things in Life Are Free." And it was really, I found, incredibly moving for a number of reasons. But one of the things is that it seems to promise Don a little redemption. He reminds him that, money is not the object of life. And, in a very touching line, he says, love can come to anyone. And you see Don tear up. And Tim, I know you thought John Hand did a great job with that scene. And it seems to present some hope for someone who has struggled and who's made bad decisions, but seems to be making good decisions now. So I think there's the promise of redemption in that song. What do you think, Tim?
Well, I mean, yes, you've got somebody, it appears to be, almost like a mystical vision, somebody from beyond the grave coming to share his wisdom that he's found. And it's a piece of wisdom, you wrote this on your Facebook page, that is true, which is that the best things in life are free. And that at a moment when everybody's talking about money and how much money they're going to make on this merger, it's just a refreshing reminder that, okay, that's not what this is about. And for them to have that moment, you sort of remember to the early episodes of this series where Bert was one of the first people to find out about Don's past. He was the one and kind of kept it secret. So they had that connection. And mm-hmm. I think it allowed for kind of a moment of kind of resolution, saying goodbye. And it was really quite moving.
Yeah, and the other thing I found really touching was that at the beginning of that clip, which I advise people to watch, Bert Cooper's last song and dance. And of course, it's Robert Morse, who starred in the 1960s in How to Succeed in Business, whose subject material and time was, very similar to that of Mad Men. It takes place in a business. But he says to him at the beginning, "Don, my boy," which I thought was very beautiful because Don comes from a really terrible family background. And as you said, he's a kind of mentor to him, and he's imparting this fatherly advice. So I just found it moving on that level as well. He is, in a sense, being, ushered into a kind of wholeness, it seems, with good values and even with a kind of father, that he has missed. So I found it very beautiful and touching.
How would we describe this moment? I mean, as you write, it could be, is it a vision? Is it a moment of just like insight? Is it, a miraculous moment? Is it a moment of grace? I mean,
yeah.
I guess we really don't know what Matthew Weiner is trying to do here.
Yeah, and I guess all those things. I think it's interesting because I was trying to think how a non-believer would be, react to that, what they would think. But, at the end of his vision or his experience or his insight or his daydream, you might say, he sort of sits back on a desk and kind of takes it all in. It's affected him. And however it happened, I always say to people that spiritual experiences are very hard to communicate to someone else once they've happened. However it happened, it was real, and it seems to have affected him, and he seems to have had a kind of epiphany, I would say. Maybe that's the best way of describing what happened to Don at that moment.
This seems to, as you said, complete kind of an arc for the character, for Don, and I have questions about where he's going from here, but maybe we could talk about that later. But it seems, as you say, that he has matured over the course of these seven episodes and come to some kind of emotional maturity, honesty about himself. He says at one point in these episodes to Peggy, about how he works. He basically, you know, lashes out at his underlings and then takes a nap. So it's this brutal honesty about who he is, and he seems to have no more kind of he's not fooling himself about, you know, the tricks he plays on others and himself.
Well, and also he's not fooling others. I mean, there's that scene where Harry Hamlin said, you know, I used to be so frightened of, you know, of you, Don, you know, but now I see what's behind the curtain. It was a kind of mean scene. But I think, you know, everyone in the office knows who he is, which is, you know, I mean, up until recently, an alcoholic and someone who was a kind of a bully, and they didn't like it. And you see at the end, Joan, you know, still not liking it and still kind of resenting who he was. But, you know, he makes these choices in the last episode, for example, not to sock Harry Hamlin in the face, you know, and also to kind of give Peggy that opportunity to shine in the Burger Chef presentation. So he's maturing, but, you know, as you say, Tim, I'm hoping that lasts. You know, I mean, we've seen that happen before. You would think that at the end of last season, where he has that moment with his daughter Sally and brings her to the place that he grew up in, the brothel, I guess, which clearly has not changed in 30 years, that epiphany would have changed him, and also the kind of moment he has where Sally says, I love you, would have changed him. But it's taking a long time for him to grow, I think.
Well, it may be true to life that, you know, maybe one step forward, one step back. Like, you make small steps, and sometimes you go back. But the hope is that you're slowly making progress, and it seems like he is.
Yeah, I hope so.
And now, of course, his second marriage has ended, and that is sad for a number of reasons, and it's sad to see his children away from him. He seems to have very little contact with them. He does seem to have reached some sort of connection with his daughter, but his sons are very much not in his life.
They're almost anonymous, even in the show, which is kind of strange.
So that's sad, and that's something that we shouldn't forget about, is that there are there is kind of this wreckage of his life that will have, I'm sure, long-lasting effects on those loved ones. So it's a difficult moment. But it does seem like sometimes for people it takes years, if not decades, to come to some kind of self-understanding, and that's where he's starting to reach.
Well, and that brings up, I think, the question we talked about when we were planning was fidelity. You know, where does fidelity fit into the picture? And I was thinking, you know, we're so, in a sense, happy where Don is at the end of the mid-season finale, as they're calling it, that we forget that, you know, he has two failed marriages, and you know, I think he left behind a bit of a wreckage with Betty, who I think is still struggling with her second marriage. Sally is, you know, even though she has some understanding, she's a bit of a mess too. And, you know, you wonder, in a sense, I found that his marriage to Megan was kind of just sort of tepid. You know, I mean, this season it's as if neither of them really cared enough to try to make it work, you know, and they're a married man and woman, and they sort of just let it go in terms of their careers. It seemed a little inconvenient, you know, for both of them, which bothered me a bit.
Yeah, I mean, she was in California, he was in New York, and, you know, they were meeting every other weekend and stuff, but you can see, you know, the ultimate commitment to actually live together and commit to a life together, it wasn't there, and as a result, you know, the marriage failed.
Yeah, and their commitment really was to their careers.
Yes.
I mean, I read a review that said something like, you know, what is Don? Don is basically an ad man. I mean, that's what he realizes. And he says the same thing to Ted. You know, when one of the characters says, I'm going to leave it, he said, no, I know you. You know, you're an ad man like he is. And Megan seems to have been, you know, kind of subsumed by her career. She doesn't seem particularly upset, you know, at the last scene. It seems that it's something of a relief to her to kind of, in a sense, get rid of Don.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the themes of the whole series, is like work life and how it defines us. And for so many people, how it is their life, and that it can kind of consume everything. And, you know, as a result, your personal life is kind of left in shambles. And that's certainly the case for Pete, who, he's not seeing his daughter for months, if not, you know, a year at a time. And he's having an affair or a relationship with this woman on the West Coast. And all he seems to care about is, you know, getting ahead at the agency.
And even in the agency, he's kind of seen as a bit of a weasel, I think, up until recently. I mean, there's that scene, the kind of fade out at the next to last episode where they're in the Burger Chef, and you get the sense of kind of Pete and Peggy and Don, you know, as a kind of family. But I think other people in the agencies don't see him very well. And he was very frustrated out in California. But you're right, there's that great scene where he comes back to his old house, I guess in, you know, Ossining or Westchester, wherever he is. And the daughter doesn't recognize him any. And the wife has a cake, I guess, that she's baked. And
oh, yeah.
He sticks a beer bottle right in the middle of the cake. And it's this, it is this very powerful symbol of a kind of sort of destruction of domesticity, you know. And he really seems lost. He always seems on the edge to me. And the actor who plays him, I guess, Vincent Kartheiser, I said, does a great job of kind of conveying that kind of, you know, sort of febrile sense of, you know, just incompletion and frustration.
Well, maybe we can talk about two, it seemed to be key moments in the series, and I think they happen in both the same episode. One is that diner scene you were talking about, mm-hmm. with the three of them around a table, wonderfully framed shot, seemed to evoke the Nighthawks picture, painting. It was Don, Peggy, and Pete. So all of, you know, the downside of this, like, work life, consuming your life, here was a moment where it seemed like, okay, this is, it's not a perfect family, but it's a family of sorts. And I think one of the messages there was like, okay, it may not be the ideal family, but at least it's some kind of family.
Which is interesting because it's mirroring what's happening in the larger society about, you know, actual families, you know, that they're becoming less perfect. And that also mirrors the pitch, you know, to Burger Chef, you know, their ultimate pitch is, you know, the family is kind of disintegrating, you know, and what does it mean to be a family? I found a sort of peace and satisfaction in that scene because you have Don and Peggy in a sense reunited. They have done a little dance. I mean, literally, they've been dancing around each other, you know, for the whole scene. And now they do a kind of dance in his office, which is touching. And also Pete, who had seemed kind of lost. There's a kind of easiness and comfort that I think comes with people who work together for a long time, you know, and they're probably more familiar with, you know, one another than they are with their families. I mean, look at, you know, Pete talks to Don more than he talks to his daughter, you know?
Yeah.
So, it's a kind of family. So it was very touching.
And they, in some ways, I mean, another theme here is love. I mean, you could say that Don and Peggy have reached a point where I think they love each other.
Yeah.
And you talked about that dancing. That was the other scene I want to mention. It was very well done, I thought, because just for those to kind of refresh your memory, it was after a scene where they were trying to hash out the Burger Chef ad, and the My Way comes on the radio, Frank Sinatra, which has been on, and, you know, Don said, well, this isn't a coincidence, we've been hearing this all day, and invites her to dance, and it's a very tender, intimate moment where she rests her head on his chest, and he kisses her on the top of the head, and it almost seems like, well, where is this going? Is this going to become, you know, a moment of more kind of explicit connection, you know, love connection? But no, it was almost like father-daughter or just friends, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking almost like a father-daughter at a wedding.
Right,
that's what
struck
me, because, you know, he's tall and she's a little shorter. And I thought, boy, you know, the old Don, you know, and, you know, they're both drinking, I think, in that scene. The old Don would have just been all over her.
Yeah.
You know, remember the scene where, I think a couple of seasons ago, where, you know, she sees him after, you know, he's gotten sick all over himself in the office, and so, you know, he's a little more cleaned up. He knows what to do and what not to do. And also, she's been pretty, I think, lonely, you know, and she could have, you know, she could have taken it a step farther, and she doesn't, you know, which I think is to her credit. I mean, because that would have been terrible, you know, personally and professionally for, you know, because that's a big mess,
right,
getting involved with Don. But yeah, it was very tender. And I thought they've both come to this place of maturity, you know, and I think, you know, it reminds me that, you know, Peggy at the end of the season has that tender moment with the boy.
Right,
Julio. Who's the, kind of the neighbor boy, you know, who's moving away. And she, you know, as you reminded me the other day in your office, that, you know, she had given up, you know, her son, Pete's son, right? And
it would have been about the same age.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a connection there, too. So, you know, I see it also as a show about some, you know, not only madmen, but kind of lonely people.
Yeah, lonely people who are making connections, maybe not in the ideal family setup, but are trying to love, or at least care for one another, whether it's the boy who lives upstairs or Don and Peggy, or even Pete seems to, he has a loyalty to Don and a real affection for Don. I mean, there's a funny line in the final episode where he's like, he's a delicate piece of horse flesh.
That's an interesting turn of phrase.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I found that very touching, actually. Yeah. It reminded me of Don's like his big brother, basically, even though Pete's, you know, as I said, kind of a mess.
Well, it's interesting because they're returning to those three characters because in many ways they were kind of the three main characters at the start of the show. Pete and Peggy had that, you know, fling, which resulted in the child, and then Don. So the fact that they're kind of coming together again seems appropriate.
And Pete's one of the few people that knows about Don's big secret, too.
Yes. You
know, that he's Dick Whitman.
I'm still not, I'm a little confused who knows and who doesn't at this point.
I think Roger, Pete, I think Bert did. I'm not sure if Peggy does.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not sure. I mean, that Hirsch, he seems to let some of it out at that Hirsch presentation, famous Hirsch presentation. Yeah. But
you know, the other thing I was thinking about in terms of family is Roger and his family. I mean, Roger and his wife, you know, who had a very sort of stormy relationship, they band together and they go to try to rescue his daughter, who's living on a kind of commune basically.
Yeah.
And he fails miserably. But then there's that scene where they're watching the moon landing of he with his wife, kind of with her, you know, he's sort of spread out on the couch and he's massaging her feet or something. And you get this sense, wow, they too have kind of made their peace, which is, you know, that's pretty hopeful.
Yeah. It's interesting, and we've talked about this before. In some ways, they're making the argument like for commitment, for marriage, because these people, most of them, Roger, Don, Pete, would have been better off if they stayed married to the people they, you know.
And Betty.
And Betty, too.
Yeah, I often think, Don would have continued his ascent, you know, with Betty. And although she was always a kind of confusing figure.
She is. And, you know, she doesn't seem to have matured in the way Don has. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what to think about that, whether that's fair to her character or whether it's, I mean, she's a woman struggling with the tensions of the time where, you know, more women are entering the workforce. Yet she's still kind of old-fashioned in the way that she wants to, you know, be a homemaker. And she has very traditional views on the war, for example, which comes out in one of her discussions with her husband. And that was kind of shocking. We're like, you know, you don't expect that. You know?
Yeah, and she does seem to be struggling against that. And I also think the way the character is written, she is not as intelligent as some of the other characters. And she has that great line, I'm intelligent, I speak Italian. You know, and she's also, as you say, I think she's kind of stuck. There's that scene where she goes with her son on a field trip.
Yes.
And it's going very well. You know, you think, well, this is great. Betty's becoming a good mother, and, you know, she's taking care of her kids. And then the kid, as most viewers will remember, ends up telling her that, I guess, her lunch that he had brought with him, you know, was sort of bartered away or something. And she has no lunch, and she really gets angry at him, as if she's a child, you know? And what do they end up eating? They just end up eating nothing, right? Just like,
like gummy bears or something that he had bartered.
Yeah.
And she was upset for the whole day, obviously.
Yeah,
like she just was petulant. I mean, she's suffered with that before. And, you know, the only connection she seems to have made throughout the whole series is with the young boy, who kind of, I mean, they were suggesting was kind of her emotional peer.
Yeah, which is kind of sad.
It is sad. Well, we've got, you know, 7 episodes to go, and they seem to have, you know, the question of redemption, maybe we could end with that. Do you see, I mean, it's very hard to predict where this is going. For a long time, we've talked about, there were so many signs of, like, a potential suicide.
Yeah.
From the opening image of the series to Lane Price's suicide to Don being given Lane's office that you thought that's where he was going. It doesn't seem that way now, but you never know.
I really hope not. I mean, I've mentioned this to you a couple times. I think that a series that ends on suicide, you know, commercially would be very hard to sell, I think, in terms of reruns and DVDs. Yeah. I mean, really, who wants to watch 7 years ending up to a suicide? Because you know that that's coming. On the other hand, you know, you have that famous shot of him falling out the window, and Matthew Weiner is no one's fool. I mean, I would imagine he probably has this series kind of all sort of planned ahead. And I hope he's not setting us up for a fall.
That's my worry.
Yeah, the mid-season finale was almost too good to be true.
Yes.
I mean, in a sense, you have Don kind of coming to this epiphany, right? On this beautiful moment, Peggy seems to be promised love, you know, through that, you know, the handyman that gives her his number. Roger, you know, also sort of the way he looks, Roger's kind of more put together,
right?
You know, and he looks like sort of very dapper, and he's taking charge. Even Pete, you know, I mean, Pete looks like he's going to be moving back. Ted's moving back. They've had a new deal with McCann. Now, you know, I think the problem could be that, you know, professionally, once they got under the thumb of some big corporate, you know, I mean, McCann, I think it's McCann Erickson, you know, is, you know, huge. It'd be very difficult to kind of navigate. And I don't know if they can keep that kind of upward momentum. And, you know, one of the interesting things, just as an aside about Peggy, I read this recently, that she's kind of trapped. You know, people think, oh, now she's going to have this kind of flowering. But, you know, women back in the mid to late 60s, you know, were very limited in terms of what they could do. So her kind of fulfillment, as it were, might be a little limited. I just wonder, you know, if they can keep that, all the characters can keep that upward momentum, and something tells me that's not going to happen.
Yes, that is my concern too, that right now, you know, this was kind of, it in some ways it felt like a finale, but it's, mm-hmm. you know, mid-season finale, yeah. you know that it's not maybe going to head in this direction.
Yeah.
But as one of the many commentaries about the show, which you can read online, said, could this end on a hopeful note? Could the series, and that if it did, it's in some ways much more challenging than ending it on a tragic note, because
right.
people are seem much more resistant in our culture to ending things on a happy note. I don't know, because it doesn't feel right or doesn't feel true. The darker themes seem easier to come by, or people seem to accept it more. Maybe, you know, I'm thinking of a show like True Detective, which was so dark, and then they tried to end it on kind of a hopeful note, and people just felt it was false.
Mm-hmm.
And in this show, I'm wondering if he can actually do something different.
Well, you know, it's funny. Just the other night, I was reading, to bring in some theology, I was reading Gerhard Lohfink has a book called No Irrelevant Jesus, and he was talking about, it's a book about Jesus, obviously. And in one of his essays, he's talking about sin. And he said that, you know, we can be forgiven for sins, but the effect of sin is long-lasting. So if I do something terrible to you, you can forgive me, but the effect is going to be there. And I was thinking about that in terms of Mad Men, that, you know, in a sense, there can be forgiveness and reconciliation, but the things that they did still affect them. So his divorce, you know,
yeah.
from Betty is still affecting both of them, you know, in terms of what's going on with Sally and Betty. The divorce from Megan is going to affect them. All the sort of decisions that these characters make are kind of embedded in their future. And as much as we want to hope for redemption, the kind of after effects of sin are probably still going to be there, which is frustrating. You know, I mean, that's the human condition. You know, they're frustrated that they've made these decisions. And it's true. I mean, that kind of sort of works against a totally happy ending. But you know, I certainly hope I don't see him. If the last scene is him, like, you know, standing
jumping out
at the window ledge, I'll be very upset. So, but by the same token, the last scene could be, you know, him. If it's he and Peggy getting married, that'll be equally as, you know, kind of annoying.
The other interesting thing I read is about, this show has been all about the 60s. It started in 1959.
Right.
This season is 1969. Who knows where it's going to go next, you know, for the ultimate finale. But is Matthew Weiner trying to really force us to reevaluate what the 60s were about, because they've been such a contentious decade for so long
mm-hmm.
that, you know, in our politics and our culture, you know, the baby boomers versus the, you know, the next generation arguing over the legacy of the 60s. Is he trying to say something different about, you know, maybe if he does end on a hopeful note, he's trying to say, well, okay, this was a very tumultuous time, but there were things that we can look to and that came out of it that really help us advance as people.
Yeah, well, in the same way that they can look, I mean, that's a good point. The parallel would be the same way that they can look at their lives.
Right.
You know, that Peggy can make good decisions, that Don can make good decisions, that Pete can kind of come back, that, you know, we might be able to look at the 60s like that and,
right.
you know, find out that the best things in life are free.
it
was funny, there was an interview with Robert Morris today in the Times where, you know, it was very touching in terms of his sort of discussing how he was sort of able to come back and kind of to his Broadway and song and dance roots. And they said, do you think Bert will come back? And he said, oh, yeah, I think that would be kind of fun if Bert came back and sang different songs to everybody to help them learn something about themselves.
Well, however the show ends, and we'll talk again maybe next year about how it ends, I think there's a generosity of spirit towards the characters and towards, you know, an empathy towards them and the way they live their lives that ultimately, no matter what happens to Don Draper, I think we will always appreciate about the show.
Yeah, and I think that the characters are so full.
Yeah.
You know, they're so rich. These are real people. And
right.
most of the times on TV, even in, you know, complex dramas, you find that the characters just don't seem real. And I think what's, for me, the realest thing about these characters is that they do things that are kind of unexpected and self-destructive.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of people do. And you say, you know, you kind of knock your head against the wall and say, Don, how could you be drunk during that presentation? Or Peggy, how could you have done this? Or especially Pete, how could you have done like a mean thing like this to Trudy? That kind of stuff. And yet that's the way people are. They're very unpredictable. They're self-destructive. They can hurt other people, you know, acting out of these kind of selfish motives almost despite themselves, you know. And you know that they have each of these people, I mean, I would think that like Don, Roger, Peggy, Pete, they're very talented. You know, they're very talented people. They're not dumb, you know, and yet they, you know, they kind of continue. It's like St. Paul, you know, why do I not do the good I want to do, but I do the bad that I don't want to do? And that's, to me, that's a real theme of the show. And that's what makes them so compelling and moving. And that's why it's, for me, I have to see it. I mean, I have to see these characters. I want to see, you know, how their lives are going to turn out.
Well, we're going to have to wait another year to spend more time with these characters, but we'll have another discussion then.
So, I hope so.
Father Jim, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Tim.